Don't let diaper rash come between you and your baby. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through. Keeping their delicate skin healthy and happy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick and goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable. When my oldest was little, she would get the worst diaper rash. It left me feeling so desperate to help her while also wanting something gentle on her skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor. When she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, she let nothing get in her way. You can use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel confident that you are making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra-premium formula for moms that won't settle when it comes to their little ones. Soothe and restore with active ingredients being dimethicone and petrolatum. You can find more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com or find it on Amazon or walmart.com.
Welcome to the Feedback Link podcast. This is Julie today. I am missing Megan with all my heart, but don't worry because I have two wonderful people here with me today. One of our VBAC doulas to co-host and one of my own clients sharing her VBAC story that I'm so excited to hear. And so I'm going to introduce both of them in just a second, but Megan, this is going to be really funny, like the way it plays out in the schedule, because this episode is coming out in the middle of our three recordings today. And then, so this is technically the second one that you're hearing with Megan absent, but it's 3 weeks after the first one that posted. And then there's another one in 2 weeks that's not going to have Megan on it either. So just bear with me. I'm missing my security blanket, Megan, but luckily I have one of my RVBAC doulas and one of my clients here to fill in that warm and snugglies that Megan always helps me with while we're recording. So first, I'm going to introduce our co-host, Tara Van Dyke, and she is in Chicago, Illinois. The only thing I know about Chicago is that the airport is really big, and I had to run from like one end of the terminals clear like to the other ones and wait on the little, for the little, what's it called? The little tram thing to come. And this one is in the military, and I was like, oh, it's between basic training and AIT, I think. And I just like having this duffel bag on my back and my combat boots, just hoofing it. I was in way better shape. No way I would have made it now. But like back then, it was quite the sprint. But Tara, her business is With You Parenting. And really fun fact about her is that she goes skydiving on all of her milestone birthdays, and she takes her kids skydiving on their 18th birthday. And I think that's the cool mom. Like, you're definitely the cool mom, Tara.
Thank you. I do it because I love it.
I went skydiving once when I lived in Hawaii. Oh, it was like 10 years ago, and it was super fun. But I'm really excited. I mean, what a fun thing to do, milestone birthday. So is it like every 5 years or?
Well, started on my 30th. And, uh-huh. There have been a few since then, just to give you a hint.
A few.
Yeah.
31 and 32.
My kids were little then, and they, you know, I didn't know the side effect of them all watching me do it was that they would all be crazy about doing it too. So it's been a big family tradition that I take them on their 18th birthday. So they're all eight, all four of them have reached that milestone now. So I have to find another reason to keep going.
I'll pretend like I'm turning 18 again, and then I'll come to Chicago and we can go together. And Megan,
I love
too.
It.
And maybe Bridget later on down the road.
Totally. Yes.
It will be fun. Okay. Skydiving. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, this story is just about as exciting as the time I went skydiving, maybe even a little bit more so. My very own client, Bridget, I say my favorite client, but I call all my clients my favorite clients. And sooner or later, they're going to start calling me out and be like, I'm pretty sure that you called her your favorite client. But I really do love my clients so much. They really do get to be like my family and friends. And Tara, I'm sure you can relate. And it really just makes my heart happy whenever one of my clients wants to share their story. Before we get into Bridget's story, I'm going to have Tara, the master skydiving best mom ever, read a review of the week for us.
Okay, I got it. There's a review from Koala Baby 21 on Apple Podcasts. And she says, amazing. I'm so happy I found this podcast. I had a scheduled C-section with my first daughter because she was measuring large. I wish I had found this podcast before I agreed to it. Next baby, I'm definitely trying for a VBAC. This podcast has made me feel so empowered and informed. Thank you, ladies. I love when people are planning their VBAC before they're pregnant.
I know, me too. We've had, in fact, I think it was our very first or our very second course when we were doing in-person courses before coronavirus. She wasn't even pregnant yet. Like, her C-section baby was like 4 months old. And she came to our in-person course because she wanted to be that prepared ahead of time. And I'm like, wow. You rock. You rock. That's definitely awesome. Yes. And thank you so much for the review. We love reviews, as you know, and we love hearing how we are helping you. It really keeps us going and keeps this podcast rocking and rolling for you.
You are tuned in to the VBAC Link podcast with Julie Francom and Megan Heaton, VBAC moms, doulas, and educators here to help you get inspired for birth after having a C-section. Together, they have created a robust VBAC preparation course along with this uplifting podcast for women who are preparing for their VBAC. Although these episodes are VBAC specific, they encourage all expectant moms to listen and educate themselves on how to avoid a cesarean from the get-go. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other qualified medical professional. Here are your hosts, Julie and Megan.
Do you want a VBAC but don't know where to start? It's easy to feel like we need to figure it all out on our own. That's what we used to do, and it was the loneliest, most ineffective thing we have ever done. That's why Megan and I created our signature course, How to VBAC, the ultimate preparation course for parents that you can find at thevbaclink.com. It is the most comprehensive VBAC preparation course in the world, perfectly packaged in an online self-paced video course. Together, Megan and I have helped over 800 parents get the birth that they wanted, and we are ready to help you too. Head on over to thevbaclink.com to find out more and sign up today. That's thevbaclink.com. See you there. Bridget, I had no idea. I did not know that you met your husband in Belgium.
Yeah, technically the Netherlands, but on our mission. We both served a mission out there. And
Okay.
Yeah. I like to get that little hook out there, you know?
Yeah, the Netherlands and Belgium. That's really cool. You love to travel. I love to travel too, but you know what puts a damper on that? Children.
COVID.
One day, maybe that's COVID what I mean. The cool mom is their 18th birthday. I'll take them to whatever country they want. That would be so cool, right? Actually, that'd be really expensive.
maybe I better just find something
else. I've got 11 years to figure it out, so I think I'm good. But she is the wife of a former Marine, and she loves cooking, baking, taking care of her babies. She loves being outside. She has two boys, 2 years old and 3 weeks old. And you guys, her VBAC rocked my world. It's one of those things where in your mind, you know, certain things work and line up and then the magic happens. But then when you actually are there and witnessing it and doing it, it just is, I don't know, magical. I don't know what other way to describe it. It's just super cool, super empowering. I left that birth all smiles, really, really excited for Bridget. But before I start telling her story for her, I will turn the time over to her.
Thank you. It's so crazy to hear you say what you said about it, because I was just so excited to have you as my doula, and it's just cool to be here on the podcast and then have you talking about it like that. And it's fun being on the other side, having already had the birth, and I can just reflect on it now. And I have to just say, I was totally that person that before I got pregnant, I was researching all the things. After I had my first C-section, I didn't even really think about it. I didn't really know what a VBAC was, actually, to be honest. I didn't know that it was a thing. And I just thought I was going to have a C-section with all the rest of my kids, and just super bummed about it. But what I actually searched VBAC something, I can't remember on on, I think it was on Instagram, and you guys popped up, and I was like, oh, wow, this has like a lot of information. And so I just like delved into it and like read every single one of you guys' blog posts and listened to all your podcasts, like to and from all my appointments and at home on walks and everything. So really cool. But anyways, to start off, so I had my first C-section was in 2018. My first, it was with my first son that was born in August of 2018, and had a really healthy pregnancy. Didn't really, I want to say that I did plan for my birth, but in all reality, I didn't really like seriously plan for it. I kind of just like looked up videos and like Googled things and stuff and thought I was prepared for it, but thought I was prepared for the hospital experience, I guess I should say, because you don't really, no one really prepares you for that. No one tells you like what it's going to be like with doctors and nurses and just like finding a doctor that's going to be like the type of doctor that you want to help you get the birth that you want. I just went to a clinic that was like in my small little town that we lived in Arizona that was close by because we were like kind of far away from like big city. And so I was just like, oh, sure, I'll just go. And they were great. They were really good. But I think I just settled with that like location wise and turned out to be just a little bit of a bummer. But so fast forward to actually having the baby. So I was 40 weeks in one day and I thought that I was having kind of like contractions one night, but we're just like, I just thought that they were like kind of building up to contractions, I should say. They were like Braxton Hicks. They weren't painful or anything, but they were just like kind of tight and getting a little bit intense. And I laid down and they went away. And so I was able to sleep through the night. And then the next morning, my husband was like, let's go on a walk. Let's see if we can get anything going. And so we went on a walk and walked the curb kind of. And I thought that I felt like a little bit of water, like fluid come out. And it didn't feel like a gush or anything, but I was like, oh, I wonder if that was like my water. Like I've heard that it can kind of just trickle out. And so we were like, okay, well, let's just go home and see if like more comes out. And a little bit later, nothing really happened, but I had tested positive for GBS in this pregnancy. And so I was like, they kind of were like, as soon as you think your water broke, like make sure you come to the hospital so that we can get you started on the antibiotics. And so I called the hospital and they were like, yeah, might as well just come in and get checked. And so that's what we did. We kind of took our time to get there and they checked me and I was also like 2 centimeters dilated before, like at my last appointment. And so when I got there, they checked me and while we were waiting for the results, we were just like in triage and all of a sudden like a ton of beeping happens and the baby's heart rate went down. It decelerated to like 60 beats per minute. And so like everyone just comes rushing in and puts oxygen on me and like flipped me over like 5 times to try to get his heart rate found kind of, or just to try to get it back to see if they can see if it went back to normal. And it did. After like a minute or so, it went back to normal. So they admitted me and they told me that I was going to be induced that night. And I was like, okay, sure. Like I'm all for it. Like, I want this baby out of me. And I didn't really know much about like the cascade of interventions or whatever. And so that was like around 3 p.m. and around 11 o'clock is when I actually got Cervidil inserted into my cervix by the doctor that was on call. I hadn't even met her once, to be honest. That was kind of, yeah, she was great. But I didn't really know her because my other doctor wasn't there. And so as soon as she had inserted the Cervidil, I swelled up down there in my lady bits. And it was like golf ball size swelling.
Oh, miserable. Miserable.
It was so painful. Yes. And I couldn't like sit upright because like I couldn't sit on that. And so like birth ball was like out of the picture and I couldn't really walk around much because it just hurt to walk around. So I was really just like stuck on the bed, which is like not ideal at all when it comes to this. You know, you kind of want to be like walking around and able to be kind of like bouncing or being in like doing sideline position or whatever. And I wasn't really able to do anything to like help baby come down. And so then I think they put me on Pitocin and contractions started happening. And they were like, well, if the contractions are like very like intense, like right at the front, then we'll take the Cervidil out. And they were like, it was insane. So all night I was up contracting. And so they eventually took the Cervidil out and I think like every single time they checked me, it was just super painful. And I didn't realize why. It's just because he was like super high up. No one really told me that. And anyways, I just wish I would have known that. But I got checked again by a new nurse that came in, and she was like super gentle. It didn't hurt when she checked me, which was strange, but I was only 3 centimeters at this point. And I opted for the epidural because I think that the contractions were like a minute apart, and they were like insane still. Like, even though they took out the cervidil, I was like just not, and I was practicing, like I was trying to breathe through them like low and controlled breaths, but I just, yeah, I wasn't able to do it any longer. And so I was only 3 centimeters and I got an epidural. I didn't know what else to do. Like, I didn't have anyone else there really to help me know, you know. And so I rested the rest of the day, and I kind of took like a small little nap. And then that night they upped my Pitocin a little bit more, and eventually the epidural wore off, and I was just up the next night again, like all night. And oh, I forgot to say, before I got the epidural, I had eaten the breakfast that they brought in. And then after that, before I got the epidural, my nurse was like, did you eat breakfast? Okay, good, because that's the last thing you're going to eat before, like, until after you have this baby. And I was like, oh my gosh. And she's like, yeah, and also you can't really drink any water. And I was like, okay. Just like took her word for it. And she was great. Like, I really liked this nurse, but I just thought that that's how it was. So I got the Pitocin later that night They upped it. I can't remember how much, but so I labored all night again. And then the next morning, I finally got to I got dilated to a 10, but he was still very high up. I don't remember what station he was at or anything. But the nurse or the doctor they had switched shifts, and so there's a new doctor on shift. And before she had even come in, she heard kind of like what was happening. She hadn't even come in to like talk to me or anything. And the nurses came back and they were like, Dr. So-and-so wants you to have a C-section. She heard like what's happening, and she wants you to just have a C-section. She thinks it would be best. And I was like, are you serious? Like, I got this
without
far.
Without even, and, like coming to talk to you or see you.
Yeah.
That's what really bugs me. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. That's something that really bugs me about our modern obstetric care, is we rely more on what we can see on a monitor than what a person's body is telling us, or by getting a feel for the situation, by actually being present, you know? Anyways, rant over.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, totally. And it really made me frustrated, because just the fact that she didn't even like take the time to come in and like talk to me and see like how I was feeling. She was just like, you need to have a C-section. And I was like, I told the nurses, I was like, no, I'm going to try to have this baby vaginally. I'm going to try as long as I can. And I want to push to see if I can get him to come down. And they were like, good. Yeah, I think that's what you should do. And so I pushed for like an hour, and he did come down like a little bit. He kind of budged just like a tiny bit. They could even see, his hair. Like, they could see his head and stuff. My husband was able to like see his head and see how much hair he had. But then the doctor came in, and she was like, this part's really annoying and frustrating too. She was like standing over in the corner, just kind of watching and just kind of like looking like, I don't know, like iffy about it, like not supportive whatsoever. And not even like there helping me push or anything. She was just like standing over there watching. And she's like, yeah, it looks like he's like having some head trauma. Like, his head looks a little red and stuff. And so I don't know if you want to like put him through this much longer. And I was, of course, like, oh, like, I don't want to hurt my baby. And like, of course, like, I don't know if like that would have been bad for him, but like, babies' heads can shift. I've learned, you know, they can, the plates or whatever can kind of move around for them to come out vaginally. And I just didn't want to put him in any like danger or pain or trauma or whatever. And so I kind of like prayed about it, and I opted for the C-section. The C-section was fine. I was like shaking a ton, which sounds like it's pretty normal. And I healed really well, good, I guess. I don't know. I had like a good recovery with my C-section, but I still like, just the emotional aspect of it was hard for me. Like, I had a friend who had a vaginal birth. This is probably selfish of me, but I was just like, why couldn't I have had that? Like, why couldn't my body have done what it was supposed to do to have this baby come out of me this way? And it was just hard. And so I would cry about it, like, every time we thought about it for like at least 5 months after. And then I eventually kind of got over it, and I just was like, okay, I'm going to have a baby back with my next baby, which is what I did. But anyways, so the next baby.
Boom. That's what you did. That's right.
So I just kind of like took notes on my phone, like everything that I learned about like VBACs and like prep for it and everything before I was even pregnant, like I said. And we actually thought, so we moved from Arizona up to Utah. We thought we were going to live here just for like a little bit before we go to California for like military things, but that kind of got changed because of COVID and stuff. And so I was kind of in the process of trying to find like a doula and a midwife over in this area in California where we were going to move. And I wasn't able to find anyone that was like VBAC experienced or anything. And that scared me. And so I was really happy that we stayed here in Utah because then I got Julie and she was so great. And
I really good doula.
It was funny because I actually, what's that?
I said you had a really good doula.
I had a really good doula. Yes. I'm so glad.
Just kidding. No, but really though, I think we were a great fit.
Yes, for sure. And like, that's the thing. You want to find someone who's a great fit for you, and you were. And actually, I messaged you guys about finding a midwife because I just didn't even know where to start. And I wanted to just find a midwife. I wanted to go with a midwife this time just because I had heard really good things about midwives. And you guys had referred me to a midwife in Salt Lake. Am I allowed to say her name?
Yeah, you totally can. We just don't like to badmouth providers, but since we really love her and I know you're not going to say anything negative about her, then definitely, definitely.
Okay. Well, we love her. Yes. Her name's Kira Waters, and it sounds like Julia's had actually a few births with her before mine, but she actually didn't even end up being at my birth, but she was still great to be able to ask all my questions to. And then I was able to get Julie as my doula, which I was so excited for. I keep saying that. I really was, just because it was cool to like be listening to your podcast. And like, I was like, every time I listen, I'd be like, she's going to my birth. And like, I know not everyone will get to have you. And people are like all around the world, around the country. And I'm sure they have great doulas too, but I was lucky to have you. Anyway.
Thank you so much.
So fast forward to this birth. I had a good pregnancy, and I actually had tested positive for GBS as well with this one, which I was really worried about, but ended up like being just fine. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal besides it had to be on antibiotics, because my plan was to just labor as long as I could at home. So I was 38 weeks and 3 days, and I had just put my son down for a nap and was taking a nap myself. And I woke up to like a really strong contraction right at 4 p.m. And so I was like, oh, I wonder if that's just like my bladder telling me I need to go to the bathroom, because sometimes that would happen with like Braxton Hicks. So I went to the bathroom and I actually had a little bit of bloody show, maybe TMI. But the day before, I also thought that I had lost my mucus plug. And so once I saw like the bloody show, I was like, I literally looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, my body knows what it's doing. This is happening. Like, I'm going to go into labor on my own, which is what I wanted like the whole time. Like, I'm sure everyone wants that. Or most
that's
people, you know,
and so, isn't it? That's awesome. It did it on its own.
Yes, for sure. Because then you're not, it's just good. So I was like, okay, well, let's just see if I have any more contractions. And I was already like laying down. And so I kind of, I don't remember what I did after this. But anyways, I had like another contraction like 15 minutes later. And then it was like 6 minutes later. And then it kind of was like 10 minutes. And then it like eventually just, it got more normal, like 5 minutes apart, 5 minutes apart. And then it was like four and then three. And then it was like 2 minutes apart, and they were starting to get to where like I couldn't really talk through them, and like I had to like stop and like breathe through them. And my husband had just gotten home from work, and my son had woken up for a nap, and we were kind of just chaos, didn't really know what we were doing. And I was like cleaning the kitchen, and I had chicken on the table that was like dripping off of the off to the floor that was like raw chicken, because I was going to make like freezer meals. I was not planning on going into labor. And so I had to like clean that up through all these contractions. Anyways, so I texted my midwife, and she was like, it sounds like it's labor. Like, you can go in. Like, I would go in once you feel like you need support and like help with labor. And texted Julie, and just kind of keeping her filled in. So she was like, hey, I'm going to take a nap so that I'm real like charged up to go at your birth and stuff. And so I was like, okay, I'm not going to bug her. I'm just going to labor. And that's what I did. And then she texted me, and she's like, how's it going? And I was like, yeah, we're on our way to the hospital. I didn't want to call you and wake you up because I know you're sleeping. So she was like, do you, like, how are your contractions? Like, do you feel like you, like, are you having to like vocalize through them? And I was like, no, not really. But I'm like definitely like breathing through them really hard. Or I don't know, just trying to have like the controlled breathing. And And you're like, okay, well, I guess just let me know like what you want me to do, because I could, like, you could go up and see, I think you said you could say like your in-laws up there or something. And yeah. I just said, okay, well, I'll just let you know like how it goes after like just the drive there, because we had like a 40-minute drive to the hospital. And so I was laboring in the back seat. And it's funny because right after I hung up the phone with you, all of a sudden I was like, okay, be quiet anymore. Like, and I was like, this is what she means. Like, this is vocalizing. And so my husband was like, okay. And I remember at one point he was like driving through that crappy Lehigh traffic, whatever it's called.
It's awful.
Yes, it's so bad. And I was like, it was like 60, I think, that you had to go. And I was like, I need you to go at least 70. I like looked at him in the rearview mirror. He was like, okay. I was like, you need to go faster. Just because it was like going to be a long drive there. And so we finally got there, and I told Julie to come to the hospital too, because I was like, this is getting really, really hard, and I just want you to be there. And so they checked me, and I was like maybe 1.5 centimeters, and I was like crushed. I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Like, it feels like I should be at least like a 4 or 5 right now, because these contractions were like on top of each other, but they were only lasting like 30 seconds, but they were like very strong contractions that were about like 1.5 to 2 minutes apart, I think. And so Julie got there, and she was like, as soon as I saw her, I was just like, oh, like, I just like relieved, because it wasn't just me and my husband in that room with the nurses, like knowing that I was only like dilated to a 1 or whatever. And so she's like, this is what we can do. We can do abdominal lifts, or we can do Walters. And like, she explained to me what they were, and like abdominal lifts, I don't know if you like explain what they are, Julie, because you're more the expert here, but
yeah, I remember I just pulled in the parking lot to the hospital when you texted me or your husband with it, you were a 1, and I was like, she's a 1? Like, how you had been working so hard. And so as soon as I got in, I'm like, all right, it's time to get to work, because something is preventing this baby from engaging, just knowing how hard you were working. And so yeah, abdominal lifts are spinning babies technique. And so before you attempt to do them, definitely look up on their website, spinningbabies.com, so that you can learn the proper techniques, because your pelvis has to be tucked a certain way, and you have to pull a certain way. And you don't, if you do it wrong, it could just not do anything, but it also could cause some issues if baby's head is wonky or something like that. But basically you get behind the laboring person and you just lift right at the very bottom of their belly, and you just lift upwards and then slightly backwards toward like their spine. And then the pregnant person has their pelvis tilted in a posterior pelvic tilt, like, so their back is flat. And then that helps the baby engage and get into the pelvis and helps the cervix open and all of those good things. But they really suck. They're hard.
They were hard, but it was after we did 10 of them in a row with during 10 contractions, I should say. But after, I was like, these contractions are painful anyways. Like, I want to do something to help get him in a better position. Like, so it's totally worth it, because I got checked again like 30 minutes later, and I was like 3 or 4 centimeters. And we were all just like, yeah, like, this is going. Okay, moment. Let's do it.
Like, yeah, high fives all around.
Yeah. And so at this point, though, I was just like not like able to like relax at all during like between each contraction, because they were so close together still. They were like, well, this is what you can do. You can get like a dose of fentanyl, or I think that was like my only option really. And I was like, okay, I kind of just want like anything at this point. And like, and they were like, well, it's going to make you feel like a little bit like high-ish, but like won't really like drown out your pain at all, or very much. And which is exactly what happened. Like, I just felt like super loopy and on the bed, and but I could still feel like the exact pain from like every contraction. So I don't know if I would suggest that, but it was a little bit of a distraction for me, so maybe that helped. I don't know. But I was on the bed, and she had me doing like side lying position, like where you're laying on your side with one leg up, your knee up, I guess, to try to get baby in a better position, which sounds maybe like comfortable, but it wasn't at all, because just contract, like, it just wasn't my choice position for contractions. But that helped too, because then I can't remember how much later it was, like not much later, like probably 45 minutes, I think, maybe. And I was like 6 or 7 centimeters dilated. And then I was like, okay, I would like to get the epidural so I can rest, so that like baby doesn't get like super high, like heart rates or whatever. I just needed the rest. And that was like my thought going into my VBAC was I wasn't like against getting an epidural, but I also wasn't against going unmedicated. I just wanted to like get my VBAC, whatever, like however that really needed to happen. If I felt like I needed to give my body rest so that it could progress more quicker than more quickly, I guess, then I would opt for the epidural. And that's what I did. And oh, I should say my midwife wasn't there. She was actually out of town. She, like, none of us expected me to go into labor this early after 8 weeks and 3 days. So another midwife was there, and she was awesome. Her name was Marne, and she was just as supportive as Kira was, and wanted me to have my VBAC and stuff, and like didn't rush me to anything. And so she came in and broke my waters, and that really helped baby come down, because I could feel the pressure of his head coming down, which was cool to be able to feel that, even like with the epidural. And so eventually I got to complete, and I pushed for 30 minutes, and out came this beautiful baby boy. And I did tear a little bit. I got like a second degree tear, but it was, recovery has been fine. A little bit painful, but just manageable for sure. I did a ton of like daily birth prep from like 34, 35 weeks. Like every single day I would kind of go through my list, and I think that really helped me. I don't know if it really helped me or if I was just lucky to go into labor this soon, but yeah. That's my story.
Yay, that's amazing.
I don't know if I missed anything, but
do you know what I just think is so funny? Just reflecting back on that day, there was just, it was a little bit of a crazy day for me, but I didn't want to tell you that. I never tell clients, like even if I'm like really struggling with something huge, which I wasn't that day. It was just like a kind of a difficult day. But I'll turn on like heavy metal music and like scream on my way to the hospital, like rah, and then like ground myself, breathe it out, and leave everything in the car so that I can come into the birth space with a clearer mind, you know, and no negative energy. But like when we were in the parking lot, and I had just finished like my clearing routine, and I was like, okay, I'm ready to go in. And then I got the text, you were 1 centimeter. I was like, dang it, I need to do a little more clearing.
More hard rock music.
So what was the timeline from the time you got admitted till the time the baby was born?
Yeah, do you have the
9
notes?
O'clock when I got there. It was 9, like straight up 9. And then he was born at 2:45 in the morning. So
yeah, not long at all. Girl,
yeah,
like,
that's awesome.
I only did 10 centimeters in like less than 5 hours.
That's incredible.
I mean, I did, my first contraction was at 4 p.m. that day.
Yeah, but that's when a one is not really a one. You were doing good work. Your body was doing a lot more than you thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just looking back at our text messages that day.
Oh, I was doing the miles.
Because I told my husband, we were just, huh? What was that?
Oh, I was just saying that, like, you had told me to, like, do the miles circuit and stuff, and I think that helped, too. Mm-hmm. But anyways, during
it's
labor.
It's so fun. You said you had lost your baby's plug, and I'm like, woohoo, your body's getting ready. In my mind, yeah. Like, I had another client, her, and her due date was 4 days before you had your baby. And then she didn't give birth until like 8 days later. And it was just so weird. Aww. And so in my mind, I'm like, there's an order to things. She's losing her mucus plug. That's great. I lost my mucus plug for 3 weeks with my
Your body's getting ready. She told me
I'm
that
like,
a couple times.
And I was that's like, really okay. Good. And because in my mind, I'm just like, well, this poor mama who's 4 days past her due date is definitely going to go because your VBAC and your first baby didn't come until after 40 weeks. And so I'm just so sure. But then you said you're starting to have bloody show and contractions. And I'm like, yay, cervical changes. and then you're like, are you moving today? Because that was like when I moved and we had just got done. It was right before we moved. Yeah. So anyways, it was just so fun going through all of that. But she did. She had your baby 2 weeks early. And it's just so funny because you just never know when these babies are going to come. Tara, am I right? Yeah. Like what have been your craziest? I think my first like back-to-back birth was with clients that were due 13 days apart. And oh, I was straight from one birth to the other. Like it's nuts.
Wow.
Tara, I just called you Tara again.
That's okay. That's okay. You can... Definitely. I've had clients do more than a month apart who have given birth close to the same day and vice versa. So you never know, but that's so nice when it goes earlier than you expect. That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a nice
I love it. So we're kind of running out of time, but we want to just kind of talk about cervixes a little bit, because your cervix did some really cool things probably would not be cool when it swelled up like a balloon in your first pregnancy, but cervixes are pretty cool. They're pretty amazing organs, and I think we don't give them enough credit for what they do. But why don't you tell everyone, I just want to, like, straight from your mouth, what did you do? Because I know you had done some certain things to get your cervix ready so that you could have your best chances of having a vaginal birth.
Yeah. So one thing that I did, well, I did a lot of things, but something that I definitely suggest doing is going to see a chiropractor just to make sure like everything's aligned and stuff. I really think that that helped. So I was seeing a chiropractor like once a week, starting at 36 weeks. I know some people go more often than that. That's what I chose to do. And then I started drinking red raspberry leaf tea, and I was eating like 6 to 10 dates a day. I was drinking as much water as I could. I actually was eating like pineapple and like the center of it. I can't remember what it's called. It's like the hard part, you know? So I guess it has like bromelain in it or something that's supposed to help your uterus, or I don't really know. I did it, and
bromelain. I didn't know it helped your uterus. I think it's good for digestion. I'm not quite sure, actually. Never mind.
I don't know what it does. Yeah. I don't know, but I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try it. Like, it's not going to hurt me. So it's just pineapple. And then I did the mile circuit every day. I think at like 36 weeks, like almost every day. It wasn't like every single day. I kind of just like, I did most of these like every single day. And I would do the forward leaning inversion, like on the couch. I'd have my husband help me. Julie came over and like showed me how to do it and showed him how to like help me come up out of it. We would do that like before we'd go on walks at night. I wanted to like make sure I would like do the forward leaning inversion and then like make sure that like baby was like in the good position. So like when I was walking, it was kind of like helping him come down maybe better. So we'd go on walks like at least like a mile, like almost every day. And then also at my birth ball, I would sit on my birth ball for like everything, folding laundry, watching a show. If I'm just like playing with my son, my toddler, whatever, I was doing like hip circles on it and the pelvic tilts like forward and back and figure eights. And I would do that just like a lot. That's pretty much what I did. We didn't like, this is maybe also TMI. I was like not down for having sex very often. So I don't think that was a big player of it.
I don't think there's any TMI on this show.
Yeah, seriously, there's no TMI.
This is all about birth. But yeah, so some people I think have good success with that, but I, no, that wasn't really on my list. So anyways. So,
pineapple core all the way.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. Do you know what? Sometimes I've seen with my clients, and Tara, maybe you can relate too. And I'm going to like have you share a little bit in just a second, but sometimes it's not even, sometimes you can't say whether it's like that certain thing made the difference, mm-hmm. or whether the act of just having something to do to put your mind at ease or put your mind towards like, hey, I'm doing something that will help, mm-hmm. that actually gets your mind psychologically ready. And maybe it's both. I mean, I'm sure it's both. There's been lots of benefits shown with the dates and the sex, obviously zeprostaglandin, Siemens zeprostaglandin, and the pineapple core and all of those things. Yeah. Bromelain. I think that's the mm-hmm. pineapple. I think that's the ingredient.
Yeah.
The pineapple. Right, Tara?
An enzyme, yeah.
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 So anyways, Tara, go ahead. Your last 2 cents, anything about the cervix. You can say anything about the cervix. And then for anyone who's in Chicago, let them know how they can contact you, because you are an awesome VBAC doula.
Well, about the cervix, I have a lot to say about the cervix, but I thought it was very interesting, Bridget, in your first birth that you said those cervical checks were so painful, and that partly it was because the baby was high, but also it can be when your cervix is posterior. So a lot of people don't realize that the cervix starts out pointing towards our back, and mm-hmm. then it moves forward as labor progresses, and it moves back and forward during our menstrual cycle too. So if they have to reach up and behind the baby's head essentially to find your cervix, or way in the back, mm-hmm. that's super painful.
Okay, so, that makes sense. I remember them telling me that too. And
one of the reasons it might have been less painful that third time or whatever was because it maybe had moved forward, and it was easier for the nurse to kind, although sometimes there are nurses that are just really good at that, being gentle. Yeah, I think that's really interesting about the cervix. But I love that Julie's, you know, talking about the psychology of, you know, it's doing the things, but it's also what's in our head about doing the things. I think that is a fascinating mix of the psychology of not trying too hard, because I think when we're trying too hard, we also can work against our body's natural rhythms. But it sounds like what you did worked for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, like, being all in, like, you were all in.
I was. And like, I was making sure like that I wasn't like stressing myself out about it. Like, I actually enjoyed doing these things. And so I think that like just the release of oxytocin too probably helped just like calm my nerves. And yeah. So anyways, I agree.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, well, it was so lovely to chat with you ladies today. Tara, throw down your website right now, or what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
My website is withyouparenting.com, and that's you, just the letter U, because, you know, it's all about being together, being with each other. That we can't promise what's going to happen or promise outcomes, but we can promise you won't be alone and that you'll have somebody with you. So that's the idea behind my business. And my email is withyouparenting@gmail.com.
So I love that. That is a great sentiment. I think, anyways, I would talk about it for longer, but since we are out of time, Tara, thanks so much for helping me co-host today. And Bridget, I just love your little family. I'm so glad you're hanging around in Utah and not in California. And I just appreciate both of you so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Bridget.
Thank you so much.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, and Julie and Megan's bios, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.